You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Today I'm joined by Brendan Kleen of Brightside of Summer to recap the narrative was this race, but with the nice big win over the Minnesota Timberwolves in Orlando and the loss over the Atlanta Magic on Wednesday. So let's recap that real quick, Brendan. This is recap that with Bledsoe, so let's start off with that. What was your reaction to getting Greg Monroe a protected first round pick, a protected second round pick, just for Eric Bledsoe?
Yeah, I wasn't super surprised that they weren't able to get a little bit more. I think a lot of fans were expecting maybe to acquire a younger player, maybe somebody who could contribute right away. Especially when you talk about the Bucks and they have Malcolm Brogdon and they have Thonmaker, who are both players that kind of came up in rumors. But at the end of the day, the fact that they were able to get a first round pick that they seem pretty optimistic about, I don't know how likely it is that it turns into a really high pick, but just to be able to get something that they can build on, package as another asset in the chest. All in all, it's not terrible. You've been comparing it to the Carmelo Anthony deal for a while, and I think most people would agree they did a lot better than the Knicks were able to do in that situation. So, if nothing else, it's a good Go ahead.
As far as Eric Bledsoe's value goes, does it show you that his value was pretty low after what occurred over the last week, though?
Yeah, for sure. He kind of crapped all over there any leverage that they did have, the way that he demanded it. There's no way to pretend like he's gonna play if you send him home, So at that point there wasn't much they could do.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. And I think the value they got, it was interesting to see what to do with Greg Monroe, because they said that right now he's rehabbing from his calf injury still, but do you believe that Greg Monroe should play at all for the Phoenix Suns, or do you think they should buy him out, like the rumors are saying?
I think they probably should buy him out. Just because I think that, I don't know. The perspective I'm coming at it from at this point is, like, the Suns have to start showing that relationships with players and agents matters to them. I know that's not something that shows up too often when you're watching the games, because, of course, it wouldn't. But, at this point, as a Suns fan, you got to start thinking about how all that stuff sort of starts to come together for this team, because Bledsoe is just the latest example in a series, basically, since McDonough took over. It hasn't gone more than a year without a situation that kind of becomes volatile. So not that the Monroe situation is going to get to that point, but just to show that you can do right by a player and put him in a good situation by buying him out and allowing him to move teams, I think it's just the better call, especially because they don't really have, a need for somebody like him in the rotation right now.
With that being said, though, Tyson Chandler is getting up there in age, and also Alex Len has proven to be albeit a viable backup at this moment. So do you think Monroe, because even with tonight, we're going to get into it in a little bit with the Minnesota victory they had, Booker and TJ Warren combined for 70 total points in tonight's game. Do you think they need some sort of third scorer to emerge to get some pressure off those guys?
I mean, they did pretty well, just the two of them today. But yeah, you're not going to get 70 out of them every night. And no other, it's been rare even that Warren has been able to consistently pick up, the secondary load. So they're clearly not going to have a third guy that's going to show up. But, at this point, I'm not sure that even would be Monroe in the first place. I think that, he's such a specific type of player that the Suns don't have. And it would make more sense maybe if they already had a post scorer, or at least, ran an offense that way, and he could just slot into that role. But they'd be changing up quite a bit of what they do if they were to plop him in for 15-20 minutes a game on the second unit, which I think would be his ideal role on a good team. So I just think with how much change would have to happen, I'm not sure how much he would produce anyway. The only thing I do see is Tyson Chandler's missed the last, I think, three games now with back spasms, and Alex Len is playing really physically in the paint, playing a lot of minutes. If he were to miss any time, or even, in one game go down, it would open up a door for them to, need that extra big man depth. But, so far Len's handled it really well, and Bender and Chris obviously can play at the five. So I just think long term it doesn't make much sense to try to, you know, put the pieces in motion to get Monroe some minutes.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, because honestly, Monroe, his value coming back to Phoenix just was the getting the extra salary for this upcoming summer, just getting them extra flexibility off the books. And I imagine Chandler, Jared Dudley, those kind of guys will be on the block as well in the next coming days and months as we approach the trade deadline. Let's touch on real quick the game from last night with Orlando and Phoenix, though. We both were at that game for Bright Side of the Sun. It was a 128-112 Orlando win, and it really wasn't that close from the entire get-go. After the first half, Orlando just blew the doors off in the second half of that game. So what was your overall reaction to that? And also, really, what I noticed from that, the main takeaway for me with that was Marquese Chriss, his values were coming up in that game, and it's just not a good habit to see so far.
Yeah, so I think you're right, Mark, that Chris was one of the bigger takeaways. He clearly got frustrated at the end of that game. You know, you can watch him over the course of a game. If he starts to get the wrong side of a few calls here and there, or his shot's not going down, it's affecting him, and that's not always great to see, especially in his second year. You know, emotion's a great thing to play with, and I think that's something the team has that, you know, can be a tool for them, but a lot of the time with Chris especially, it's not a tool, and it ends up with, you know, silly fouls and technicals especially. And so, yeah, I think, what was it, he has 23 fouls in like 92 minutes this year?
Yeah, I think his last five games, he's got out of three of his last five games, not including the Minnesota game. I think it was around 23 fouls, like 95 minutes or so like that. So yeah, it's a foul almost every 4 minutes, you know, four, which is by far one of the worst in the league. So he's going to really have to improve on that. But really, I want to touch on a positive with Marquese Chriss real quick while we're on him. Is his perimeter jump shot seems to be coming along pretty good, his three-point shot. So what's your overall take away from his offensive skill set so far?
Yeah, tonight, I mean, anyone who watched the game tonight will remember the play late in the fourth quarter, about, you know, 2-3 minutes left. Booker drives to his right down the lane, and Minnesota just sags completely in, as teams have been doing whenever Booker has the ball. And it wasn't even too difficult of a pass, but he slipped it over to the right to the weak side, and Chris was wide open. And to see him make that shot with in crunch time like that, and to, you know, be on the floor and earn those minutes was really exciting. And I think it was a similar performance to the one we saw against the Kings in Jay Triano's first game, when Chris was just a monster. You know, he was making passes himself to the corner when he got the ball on the short roll to the rim. And, you know, it's those flashes that make you really excited about what he could be someday. But it's the consistency that I think everybody has had difficulty with, and that's hasn't really gotten much better.
Yeah, I agree with you on that part, because you want to see his offensive game blossom a little more coming into the sophomore season in the NBA. But really, his defensive and his mental errors were on display in the summer league. They're still in place right now, a couple months into the season. So it'll be interesting to see how he develops along that front. But another big takeaway from the Orlando game was Josh Jackson's performance so far as a rookie on the Suns. He was 9 of 18 in 22 minutes for 18 points, a block, two steals, an assist, and six rebounds. So what was your takeaway from Josh Jackson's performance?
Yeah, that second quarter. He played the entire second quarter last night. TJ had a little bit of a rough time getting started offensively in the first quarter, and so Triano rode Jackson all the way through that second quarter, and he scored a bunch, and that was really surprising. I think we've gotten used to seeing him impact the game in so many other ways that it's almost surprising when he starts putting the ball in the hoop. But you know, he had a lot going for him in transition. I think he created two shots for himself just off of steals in that quarter, and you know, I think he made a three in the corner, and it was just exciting to see him impact the game, you know, including on offense like that, fill up his stat sheet. That's kind of the player he's going to be one day, is somebody who's going to, you know, tick every box. And so to see him really, really do it in a big way, especially against an Orlando team that has that versatility and athleticism on the wing, You know, it was the second unit for the beginning of that quarter that he was able to pile up those points on, but he stayed in to close the half against their starters, and his production didn't really go away. So, you know, that's a nice glimpse. It, you know, makes you a little bit excited after a few rough games for him, for sure.
Yeah, I agree with you there, because if you have Jackson with these continuous performances like that, let's say he gets a little hot streak going, would you want to see Warren, Booker, and Jackson all be starting together at one point this season?
Yeah, well, that's what Watson did, right? And then people didn't like that. But yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it really hinges on who can defend the four, because while Warren and Jackson both maybe have the height and length, you know, on paper, it maybe looks like they're the kinds of guys who could defend that position one day. It doesn't really look like right now that either one of them is capable. You know, I mean, I think Orlando's a good example of a team that they kind of don't have a chance to do that against, because, you know, Aaron Gordon is such a matchup problem. He's a matchup problem for anybody, you know, including Chris, who started. But, you know, when you don't have that combination of quickness and size that you need to defend, you know, guys like Gordon, then you don't stand a chance. And I think that was the position that him and Jackson were put in early in the year, the first three games with Watson, and they didn't do well. But, you know, if they play well together when they do take the court, I could definitely see it. It's a good way to get Jackson, you know, in the starting lineup without taking too much talent away. But what do you think overall about, you know, Warren to the bench has been a big topic, and, you know, the 35 points on 22 shots tonight, he's a team leading plus 26, maybe kind of quiets those. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you on that, because if he continues his offensive stretches like this alongside Booker, they need TJ with how their roster is currently set up without Bledsoe. Because we've seen the last three or so games when TJ was cold in the first half, Suns were down by double digits almost every time. So they need consistent production out of both Booker and Warren on offense, because it's fisting guys in that area. So yeah, I think that this cools down that topic a little bit. But I think maybe, because we saw with Trion tonight, a lot more different lineup variations. And we saw Booker for almost a quarter play point guard. And we saw also Jackson shooting guard at one point. I believe Chris at Watt, small ball at five as well. So good development to see Trion at least mixing up now, right?
Yeah, it's nice. And you and I were talking yesterday that it seemed like you listened to the starting lineup was coming any day. And of course, it happened tonight. You know, he's only 1 of 5 from the floor, but 5 assists and, you know, held his ground in crunch time.
Ball's doing a lot better when you listen there.
Yeah, and it looked good tonight. I mean, it helps that Jeff Teague's a little bit of a smaller player. Ulis is able to defend him a little better. But, yeah, I mean, I think it looks a lot nicer. And, you know, James is the kind of player who just looks like he makes more sense on a second unit, kind of like a microwave scorer type of guy. And he was 4-4 from the floor tonight. And, you know, he had his three-point shot going last night. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see that, you know, having more of a scoring punch on the second unit, see how that goes. And, you know, Ulis setting the table a little bit more for those guys in the starting lineup. But, you know, they're both going to be around the same minutes either way. It's more just a switching up of the role. But what else did you see tonight that kind of stuck out to you? I think, you know, we could go back to Marquise Chris. That was a big story today as well. But what did you see?
What I liked, he didn't stand out that much tonight. I think he was one of the worst plus-minus guys. But Dragan Bender had a really good moment in the fourth quarter on that Booker pass, and that, I think it was very in the closing minutes. He had a very big basket there. He's been one of the more consistent guys as far as defense goes. I think he's not getting talked about as much because of that stuff he's doing on as far as, or to keep us on the perimeter, staying in front of guys against like Nikola Vucevic and Carl Anthony Towns. Deep for someone still 19 years old. Sentiment so far, Dragan?
Yeah, I think we were a little maybe carried away in the beginning of the season after a rough rookie year, that, you know, this guy hadn't shown anything. I just don't think he had been necessarily given the opportunity to show what he was capable of. And when your calling card's going to be defense, that's kind of, it's difficult to make an impact as an 18-year-old rookie on the defensive end. He's looked a lot more confident this year, and I think he knows that he has the length to really hold anybody up on defense. You know, he moves his feet so well when he has to switch out onto smaller players or corral them as they're kind of coming toward the rim. And, you know, he plays like he knows that, you know what I mean? And he knows he can recover really easily, and especially when he's out there with another bigger player, you know, basically not Marquese Chris. I think he's been more successful when he's playing next to Chandler or Len, for sure, to have that rim protection behind him. He can really, really affect the game as a defender when he knows that he has that last line of defense. He can, you know, take a little bit more risk and kind of bounce around a little better, but for sure. And you know, yeah, the offense is here or there from game to game, but he's been making his, you know, at least open threes, which if he can make open threes and affect the game defensively, then he's gonna keep playing at the very least, and that's just gonna build his confidence.
Yeah, with Bender, it's been all about confidence with him, because I think under Earl Watson, he had none of that because he didn't see consistent playing time. He was out of position at the small forward spot. But now with Triano, it seems like he's been a lot more comfortable playing the four alongside Chris and Alex Len. That blender combination on defense, I think, is still one of the better plus-minus as far as defense goes. So them gelling together in the second unit's a really good sign. But another guy I want to touch on real quick was Devin Booker. With Troy Daniels, he only played 7 minutes in this game. And I think finally Jay Triano is realizing that you keep him in, even though he's been really talk about keeping him down as far as around 33 minutes a game. I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of these performances from Booker as far as more 40-minute performances under Triano.
Yeah, I think it's been weird to see the way that Triano and you know, Watson before him too, honestly, has handled Booker's minutes, because I just think it's really weird to... All of us know that the offense really struggles without Devin Booker on the court, and so to watch him still only play in the low 30s a lot of nights, even when the team's struggling to find open baskets, is just kind of weird, you know? It didn't make a ton of sense, so to see him ride him really, really hard tonight, and even on a back-to-back, to really just see what he can do and have that patience was awesome. And so... I think that they will. I mean, I think if he can get going and play through his mistakes like that, you know, he shot extremely well tonight, 13 of 22 from the floor, 5 of 9 from 3. I don't remember the last time he had less than 5 assists. I mean, off the top of my head, it seems like he's been right around there every game all year, and that's been really awesome to see as well, just to see him finding those passes. He talked to Zach Lowe in that ESPN piece a little while ago that, you know, he's really making an effort. He'll go through stretches of games where that's all he's looking for. And so that passing combined with the shooting the past few nights it's been really unguardable, even with the extra attention he's been getting.
Yeah, it's been really good to see, because I know a lot of national opponents really have been watching the Suns eye closely, but as a one-tool guy before he could turn 21 was kind of ridiculous. I mean, he's more of an all-around tool right now as far as defense goes. He did really, really well against Jimmy Butler. Went 15 times than Butler did, but he was only 5-17 overall, and he didn't make really that much of an impact as far as offense goes, shooting the ball. So that's a very good positive to see from Booker. And Toronto spoke about that as well. He's like, as far as the evolution of Devin Booker on both ends of the floor. So it'll be really fun to see how he develops on that end. But another guy I was really, really impressed as far as defense goes tonight was Marquese Chris. 5 blocks and 26 minutes on the floor. So this should be a very good small ball 5 in the future, perhaps, to be honest. But what was your reaction to Marquese Chris tonight as far as defense goes? Because it's really promising to see so far. If he stays out of foul trouble, he's a really good impact player on defense.
Yeah, if he can block shots like that, you know, it's can be really frustrating watching him play defense sometimes. He just gets so lost, and there was a possession toward the end of the game. It was after Triano had taken Booker actually out of the lineup, and I think it was one of Minnesota's last possessions when Jackson got put in to kind of have that defensive advantage, and Chris was still out there, which was kind of surprising as the broadcast was talking about how Booker had gotten taken off to still see Chris there. But with those 5 blocks, I guess you ride the hot hand in a way. But he can just get so lost. But if he's even just If they can run a system where he's just sitting back, waiting as that last, you know, weak side shot blocker, then, you know, that'll be a really easy way for him to contribute defensively. And he's not the kind of player that Bender is, defending smaller players. And, you know, he's putting on the weight to kind of match up with the bigger guys. But as a shot blocker, that's going to be his easiest path to affecting games defensively. So he's never going to have five every night or anything like that. No player's that good. But if he can just get, you know, those instincts down and start to have a feel for being that player for the Suns, they don't have another guy like that. You know, Tyson Chandler's not that kind of guy anymore. You know, he had two blocks tonight, but those are more sitting back and kind of muscling up on his man individually. He's not, you know, soaring in like Chris can. So I think it could be really, you know, impactful if he can continue it, for sure.
Now, this is looking really far ahead, but let's get to maybe when all these guys are around 25 years old. So, like, let's say 5 years from now, Marquese Chris, Dragan Bender, Josh Jackson. And in Marquese Chris, I projected be on, like, the rim protector. I mean, just overall, I want to get your opinions on this as well. Dragan Bender is more of, like, the perimeter switchy guy that's going to be a five-tool guy as far as off defense goes. And wing defender. An all-around guy can be the secondary option. TJ Warren can be this microwave scorer off the bench. But do you feel like those three guys, Jackson, Chris, and Bender, it's really early on, but when they show these kinds of flashes like this, do you think these are the types of guys that you want long-term around Booker?
I think Booker's going to need a nice, you know, defensive insulation around him. He's shown a lot on that end, and I think the effort he's putting in makes you a little bit more comfortable building around him in general. But he definitely is going to need players who can, A, you know, hit open shots that he creates with the amount of attention that defenses pay to him, which we saw a lot last night. You know, a lot of TJ's points actually resulted from Booker passing when the defense came his way. So he's going to need players like that who can make those shots when they find them. And Chris did that tonight, and Bender's been doing it for the most part all season. I'd be interested to kind of see how Jackson develops as an off-ball player as well, and that's something to watch because we did talk about his impressive opening half against the Magic last night, but that was a lot with Booker out of the game at the beginning of the second quarter and with the ball in his own hands, in Jackson's hands. So, you know, that's something I'm watching with him. But overall, yeah, I mean, you've had enough signs to at least be optimistic, more so than you did, of course, when Watson was in there. So it's not as dire as it seemed, but, you know, Jackson's still the fourth overall pick, and when you see how well some of the other rookies are performing, it's not necessarily inspiring to compare them to Jackson, but that might be a little bit unfair just based on situation and, you know, success on, you know, team success as well. A couple of those players are on really, really high-performing teams, so it's going to, you know, make them look a little better, whereas Jackson's being asked to do a lot more individually. So, you know, we'll see, but it's definitely not as bad as it looked.
So what's your final thoughts from the Timberwolves game? Maybe we touched on Marquese Chris, Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, Dragan Bender, but it's a nice surprising win.
Yeah, it was a really surprising win. I mean, I think we both were, especially after last night, knowing they were coming in on a back-to-back, I don't think either one of us were expecting them to even be competitive against such a really, really talented Wolves team. You know, you mentioned it was going to be kind of miserable to see how much Devin Booker was going to struggle against, you know, the way that Tom Thibodeau likes to defend, which is really to overload on the strong side and make it miserable for ball handlers. And he was able to beat it with his passing and his shooting, and that was pretty exciting. And just especially to have him do that right after he, you know, had so much negative attention, at least around the local media, as far as, you know, that double team attention he was getting. So to see him beat it like that, and I don't know how many fans stayed tuned for the post game interview he did on Fox Sports Arizona, but he was beaming, and, you know, even just that might be my biggest takeaway, is to see him really, really take pride in his ability to step up on offense like that. And TJ actually gave an interview after the game too, so they're both really excited, and I think the team is definitely going to feed off this, and we'll see what happens heading into Monday at home against the Lakers.
I know it's a really good win. It might be a little premature, but Is this the type of game that could flip things around for this young roster that makes them get a little momentum over the next couple, five games or so, or next stretch of games?
Yeah, I think the bigger thing to watch is, you know, the point guard rotation has been inhibiting a lot of what they can do as an offensive unit, even besides what Booker's and Warren do. You got to have a guy that is capable of handling that playmaking load. So what I'm watching going into the next few games is how Ulis handles that, move into the starting lineup, and see what it can do for the offense.
Quick question related to Booker real quick before we get to our two-back question before we let you guys go. Do you believe that we should see a lot more point Devin Booker going forward? Because we saw a little bit tonight, but he was really pretty underrated coming out of Kentucky. I think he goes, and he started showing his third year he's a pretty viable playmaker. So I think we should see Booker out there more often and Shane Yawls.
I would have maybe said that more, and they did it a lot with Bledsoe on the court, but without him, it's just difficult to see who they play in that second spot. It would be interesting for them if they were to really buy into that and have another wing on the court, whether that's Josh Jackson or even somebody like Troy Daniels, to just really, really actually put Booker, nominally as the point guard, defending point guards or, carrying the ball down the court every offensive possession. I just don't think that's his ideal role with the kind of off-ball shooter he is. The way he can bend defenses, kind of, running through the lane to get open like we've seen him do a lot more with Triano. I think I've been really excited watching what he does in those situations, so I'm not necessarily in a hurry to put the ball in his hands. I think if he's getting 5 or 6 assists a game, he's affecting the game plenty as a passer. So, I'm kind of happy with how he's been playing recently, and not that he can't handle it, but I'm almost just inclined to let him ride the streak he's been on and kind of let him develop in that pocket a little more.
Yeah, I'd go with you as well with that, because Booker, I think, is showing me he just turned 21. He's by far one of the brightest young stars as far as shooting guard field in this league. 3 or 4 years, he's going to be one of the best players in this league. So I think you're stocking him as one of the best shooting guards in the league by around 20 is probably a good idea. Let's get to real quick before we let you guys get questions from you guys. We have at Mike No Thumb, with Greg Monroe. Buyout, trade for a bad contract, or plus more draft assets? We kind of touched on this already in the beginning of the episode, Brent. Should the Suns do?
I don't know. It is interesting because I do think he's a talented player, and just the fact that he's already said that he's willing to play for the Suns is, I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I just think it's in their best interest to kind of see what they have in this unit one last year before they really have to start making some decisions. So he kind of would just put a wrench in all of that and be sort of the opposite of what they've been trying to go towards all year. So in that way, I just think it's better to leave it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I believe that they should try to find a trade, but if not, they should buy out his contract because they already have the minutes they need to get for Marquese Chris, Dragan Bender. And when he comes back, Alan Williams, he's kind of the forgotten piece. All this because when him and Tyre Ulis are together, people are ready as far as combos go in the league and synergy. So that'd be really interesting to see when he comes back from the knee injury. So there's going to be not really much room for Alan Williams or for Greg Monroe as far as roster going right now or in the future. So I agree with you there. I think it's either going to be a trigger or a buyout coming through for Greg Monroe. Our final question on our mailbag here is from Sato at Sauce_Boss. McD talked about having the assets to go after a big name. And him going after with all these pieces, getting with that final piece from Milwaukee, likely conveying around the 2020 draft. A name out there, maybe around February or summer. Who should the Suns go after? I have a name in mind, but I want to hear you out first.
We were talking yesterday, and I think in my mind the best plan, just because of where this team's at, along its timeline, is to package, if they don't land exactly where they'd like to in the draft, if there's a couple teams worse and they're, tired of drafting fourth overall, I think we could definitely see a deal like the one that they made for Marquese Chris, where they packaged, a late first rounder and a player in Bogdan Bogdanovic and kind of moved up again into the lottery to take their second target. I think that's something we could see, maybe even, you know, a similar deal to what the Philadelphia 76ers pulled off, moving up from 3 to 1 in this year's draft. I think that those are the kinds of deals that Suns fans should be thinking about, you know, because of how top heavy this draft is, with guys like Luka Doncic sitting there and really looking like they can make a difference right away. And the back half of this draft, the back half of the lottery in this draft, doesn't look nearly as good as it did in this past year, when teams were able to kind of sit tight and pick up players that could make a difference, similar to the ones at the top. So I think the Suns might do that. That's where I would lean, especially because of how good Doncic looks and others. Let's hear your idea here.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think that's really on the table. I think that's probably McDonough's number one option, but I think they need to add some sort of guy that's around the age of 25 or higher onto this roster. They don't need to add more guys that are 19, 20 years old, or five foundational pieces in Dragan Bender, Devin Booker, Marquise Chris, Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, Tyler Ulis. You have to all set up, so now you have to package maybe one or two of those guys, some of those picks, and just go all in for that one guy book for the next decade or so. I think that one guy is Anthony Davis in New Orleans. I know you write for Bourbon Street Shots on ESPN, Brendan, so what would it take for Dunno to get him out of New Orleans?
I think I would be surprised if anything happened until he's in the, you know, maybe not the last year of his contract, but he has 3 years left, so I think it's going to at least get into next season, after next summer. If they continue to struggle all the way through this year, all the way into next year, as badly as they have the past few, then maybe you start to hear those rumbles, because it sort of starts to become a sunk investment at that point to be paying a superstar that much money if you're unable to put the talent around him that you need. So I think that there's going to be more patience if a team like the Suns is going to try to nab him. But at the same time, you know, it didn't take as much as we expected for it to take to get Chris Paul off that team 6 or 7 years ago. So crazier things have happened, but I think in general the Anthony Davis talk might be just at the very least premature. But that's not to say that a team like the Suns doesn't have that patience. They clearly have that patience to wait it out, especially for a player that talented.
It could be premature to talk about it, but if DeMarcus Cousins walked in free agency, do you think Anthony Davis would have went out of New Orleans? Because at the point, who do they have? Drew Holiday and Solomon Hill?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty grim, because they won't have a really means to replacing that kind of talent in free agency as a team that won't pay the luxury tax. So it's definitely a situation to monitor. I think the biggest, you know, for them, the biggest key is, especially they've been successful. They've won, I think, 3 of their last 4. They beat the Clippers Saturday night, in a pretty big win. And if they win games, if they continue to stay around 500 and be right in that playoff conversation, I think it gets more and more likely that Boogie stays in New Orleans. And I think then it becomes even more likely that Davis can buckle in and kind of see what he has with this core. And, you know, they're both still in their mid-20s figuring it out. You know, I think if they both really are dedicated to figuring out how good they can be together, then it can continue to get better in New Orleans, even though the talent around them, like you're saying, is obviously not as good as it could be or should be.
Yeah, I agree with that, because with Boogie and Anthony Davis, if they get to get that, they could be one of the top duos, the best first forward to go. But going back to the Suns real quick, I think if they added someone like Luka Doncic to this roster, it would be a quick spike up as far as wins go. No one wants to add in like two pieces from the draft. Let's say Mo Bamba from Texas plus Luka Doncic. If they wanted to add two guys that are 19 and 20, like Marcus Chris and Bender, do you think those type of guys, like Bender and Chris, do you think those are guys that would then be coinciding in a trade for a bigger piece like Anthony Davis? Because at that point, there'd be way too many young guys, right?
Yeah, I think that's the way the dominoes fall. If McDonough actually has both avenues available to him, if he's able to find two sorts of, you know, paths to adding talent like that, then it's going to work out that way, where he's replacing these younger players in this year's draft, and then after that, in July in free agency, or you know, into the end of the summer, he's finding those trades, because yeah, we're already seeing it this year that these guys who have so much potential are struggling to find that time, that playing time consistently. So for sure, that's going to be the way that it would work from my point of view. And I think the front court especially has a lot of openings, for playing time if these guys don't really start to show that they're a part of the future. You want to move on to the Lakers game and give our quick picks?
Let's go there. We have Lonzo Ball coming to town on Monday. You'll be there. So what's your overall expectations for that game?
I'm excited to see, you know, what Lonzo does. He had a triple-double tonight. Yeah, I think he became the youngest player in NBA history, past LeBron James, to notch a triple-double. So, you know, he might be putting it together a little bit more than he did earlier in the year, and that Lakers team has a quietly decent defense and some talent, some veteran talent with Brook Lopez, who is a matchup problem for, you know, the Alex Len, Tyson Chandler types. So it could be interesting to see sort of what happens with that, but they probably are a more talented team than the Suns right now, and so I tend to think that they'll win, but I don't think it'll be as lopsided as we've seen some of the games get for the Suns.
Oh yeah, I think it'll be a really close game, because if Booker and Warren keep their hot streaks going, and if Chris and Bender have at least plus games, they don't have to be stuff-stuffing type of games, but if they're just plus, they don't get in foul trouble or anything like that, I think that's something to come away with the victory, because I think the Lakers come off a back-to-back. Sorry, right there. They will be coming off this loss, but I really think this could be just a good momentum game for the Suns with a Minnesota win, and getting a possible two straight victories over the Lakers would be a really nice thing to see. So I'll go on a limb and say the Suns get a nice win against the Lakers here. Or I think you said the Lakers. Right.
I said the Lakers. Yeah, I think the Lakers win by, you know, 8 to 10 points. So we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, it would definitely be interesting to follow, and we'll definitely be back with you guys later this week. I believe I have already had Kellen Olsen committed to an episode that we're going to do. Just a quick little draft preview. If you want to join us, Brendan, it'll be early next week. We'll be talking about Michael Porter Jr., Jaren Jackson from Michigan State, Andre Ayton, Mo Bamba draft class with the Suns, maybe. Possibly trying to the number one spot. I think it might be a good time to start discussing those guys a little bit. So it'll be fun to watch the Suns over the next couple weeks and see how all these guys come about. So thanks again, you guys, for tuning in. We'll be back on our regular schedule Monday through Thursday starting this upcoming week.